Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello, welcome into an all-new Spin Rake. Producer Cam here with you. A quick note before we kick off today's show from the producer's desk, just scanning through Twitter. Of course, shortly after we finished recording, the Blue Jays announced that Bradley Zimmer is designated for assignment, which means Jackie Bradley Jr. will remain on the roster. It's important because Drew and Caitlin had a conversation about the two. The merits of having which one on the roster, the defensive, offensive implications, and now we know who's on the roster. So, just for some clarity's sake, this was recorded before the news broke, but there's still value in that conversation between Drew and Caitlin as the two looked at JBJ's offensive and defensive productivity and how he meshes in with the Blue Jays. If you haven't already, make sure to like, rate, subscribe to the show. And as always, thank you so much for your support. And without further ado, here's Drew and Caitlin.
I'm here, joined, as always, at the beginning of the week by Caitlin McGrath, who covers the team for The Athletic. Caitlin, the sky's falling, but I hope that you are still okay and well.
I am well. I am doing well. I actually got to slightly sleep in today, which was a joy. I needed it. For whatever reason, I feel like the time changes of the weekend series always takes a lot out of me because you're doing night, early evening, I guess, 3 o'clock start, and then you're doing a full day game. It's like your wake-up time is different each day, and, like, your time of arrival at home is different each day, and it just is a – it's always a quick turnaround, and, yeah, so.
They're making you run the gauntlet these days with these starting times. You did get to go see some tennis, though, this week. You got to go and see Serena Williams, which was nice, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was really fun to be there. I obviously read the Vogue piece that she put out, and then – almost instantly, I was like, I gotta go see her. This is gonna be my last time. I've seen her before, but obviously I knew this would be but my last time seeing her because I won't be in New York during the U.S. Open. Sometimes it works out that the Jays are there playing the Yankees at that time, but not this year. So I went. It was great. Kind of had a feeling it might be her last match just because she hasn't been playing a lot. So I wanted her to win. Everybody in the crowd wanted her to win. But also, realistically, it was possible that it would be her last match in Toronto. So that's why I wanted to be there. It was great just to, like, be part of that send-off to her and just cheer and see her. I mean, I'm obviously a huge tennis fan, and we've been so blessed in this almost the entire time that I've been watching tennis that she's been relevant and been basically the best tennis player that we've ever seen. And so it felt like just such an opportunity to go see her. Like, if you have these sports legends and you have the opportunity to see them one last time, you got to take it. And so that was my time to do that. And I was actually thinking, like, ahead to next year when the men will be in Toronto, wondering, like, will Roger Federer be here? Like, should I sort of plan ahead? Maybe. Or Nadal. Once Serena hangs them up, then you start to think the end could be coming for a few other guys on that side. I've never seen Roger Federer. And I was actually never – I've never been a huge Federer fan. I mean, I'm a huge Federer fan in that he's great for tennis and everything. But I've always kind of leaned towards, like, Nadal. So that's just me. But I would love to see him.
Not only Serena Williams has a case to be the best athlete ever, just tennis player, not just women's tennis player, just athlete, tennis player, anything. A very legitimate case given her incredible body of work. Caitlin, of course, as I mentioned, she covers the team for The Athletic, which, of course, where you're listening to this, you can subscribe to The Athletic if you don't already. You can go to theathletic.com/spinrate, subscribe, let them know that we sent you, get yourself a tiny discount Read everything that Caitlin writes. Read everything that everyone writes as we wind down here through the dog days of August and into the very important and exciting pennant races. I also mentioned that Caitlin and I do this show once a week at the beginning of the week. You should subscribe to the show so you can hear what Caitlin and I say right away. And also because we record another episode later in the week. Me and Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays All-Star, get together, talk about all things Blue Jays. And there's a lot to talk about right now. It's not been a great month of August so far. Here we are, 2 weeks in. The series in against Cleveland, against the Guardians at the Rogers Center. Blue Jays lose 2 of 3. Has a lot of people asking a lot of questions, quite rightly. But also sometimes it's easy to fail to see the forest for the trees sometimes. I think Sunday's game in particular is the kind of game that has people really talking, really frustrated. The Blue Jays didn't score a lot of runs, as one may have been able to predict as they went right through the heart of the Cleveland's very vaunted starting pitching rotation. Pitching is Cleveland's whole thing. It's what they do. It's what they've done for a number of years now. It's what got them all the way to the World Series in 2016. It is the basis upon which they, as a team, are built. But the offense is different, right? The offense looks different. And I really want to talk about that. I want to talk about some takeaways from the Cleveland series. I want to talk about the offense, what Cleveland's offense kind of makes us think. Also, just bigger picture stuff on the Blue Jays offense. And then, of course, we'll look ahead to a series upcoming against the dreaded Baltimore Orioles. World-beating, playoff-contending Baltimore Orioles. But let's start with this series against Cleveland. Caitlin, what are your just general thoughts, I guess, on it? Understandably, a frustrating outing for the Blue Jays or Blue Jays fans. Didn't score a lot of runs. Generally stymied by this great Cleveland pitching staff. Does it reveal anything to you? Is there something that this series might tell us or you about where the Blue Jays sit in the pecking order in the American League?
I think that these are the types of series that are the most frustrating to watch from a fan's perspective, because it's those series where the Blue Jays pitching by and large comes through, and then it's the offense that lets them down. And this whole entire season, and just the general, you talk about how Cleveland is built around pitching. Well, the Blue Jays are supposed to be built around their very difficult to get through offense, and the offense that's supposed to do a ton of damage. And so it's obviously the Blue Jays won the Saturday game on the back of good pitching from Mitch White and the bullpen. The bullpen, by and large, was really effective this entire series. They didn't allow a run until the ninth inning, I think, when Trent Thornton came in. Other than that, they kept it scoreless. Barrios did not have a good outing on the Friday game, but then afterwards, like again, the bullpen was really good. And so mixed bag of pitching performance. And then Kevin Gausman, it's just one of those ones where you kind of throw up your hands and you're like, why is this happening to this guy? Because he pitched really well. The Cleveland Guardians are kind of a tough matchup for any kind of pitcher. And I almost thought this is a tough matchup for Kevin Gausman, only because the thing that has sort of undone him almost inexplicably this year is just these balls getting through some sloppy defense behind him, which also doesn't jive with the Blue Jays as a whole. Are actually a very good defensive team. They are overall top six in the majors in terms of outs above average. Their infield defense is actually top three, I believe, in terms of how good they've been this year. And so this isn't some season-long trend where you kind of come to expect it. It's just so strange that for whatever reason, is it the type of balls that Kevin Gausman generates? Early on, it was hitting against the shift, but they've toned down the shift against when he's on the mound, and there's still balls are getting through. I mean, his FIP is like 2, which is basically the best in the majors, and it's why FanGraphs War loves him, because he does things that FIP loves. He strikes out a ton, he doesn't walk anyone, and he doesn't give any home runs away. Or gives up home runs, I should say. He has given up 7 on the year, which is tied for the lowest in all of the major leagues. So this is all to say that I wrote about this yesterday and kind of trying to contextualize Kevin Gausman's season. And it's been like, we are not talking about it enough, because it's actually been quite an elite season. If you look at FanGraphs, looks at his value and says he's been worth $35 million. It's great value for the Blue Jays. It's just that some of the numbers don't jump off the page. He's 8-9 in his starts. He has a ERA that's just above 3. It was under 3, then his line yesterday hurt him. So I think that it's just it was three games that were very frustrating. Even the winning game, they got the important home runs that they needed, and they pitched really, really well in that Saturday game. But I think there's some times when fans want more. Like, they're wondering why they can't get those home runs when guys are on base, and what is, you know, what is preventing this offense from doing a ton of damage that we know they're capable of, because we've seen this team score at prolific rates. So, I mean, I guess we'll get more into the differences between the Guardians and the Blue Jays and whatever else you want to talk about. But just from like a bird's eye view of this series, I understand why it's frustrating, because I think it's the inconsistency, and it's the thing that we've said all along this season, is that a lot of times the elements of the roster are just like not jiving together so often. So you look at, again, that Kevin Gausman starts, like the pitching was so, it was fine. The pitching was fine, but then it's like the defense is letting them down, and then the offense is letting them down. And then you look at the other game. I mean, I guess the Saturday game, things did jive pretty well in that you got those few very timely hits that put you over it. But again, like, this is an offense that is capable of scoring a lot more. And so this series was kind of a microcosm of the season as a whole, and that it kind of showed these trends that we've seen, and we're left wondering, you know, why is it that this team with so much talent is so often playing inconsistent or having these stretches where they look like world beaters, and then they struggle against teams that are also playoff contending teams?
There's a lot to unpack from what you've just said. I got a lot of things I've been thinking about, things I've been looking up. Number one, I have a theory that with Shane Bieber on the hill pitching as well as he had, and given the fact that it was a Sunday, you know, afternoon getaway, maybe not a getaway day, but the Blue Jays lineup in particular was a little bit odd, in that you had Biggio in right, you had Whit Merrifield playing second base, you had Ramel Tapia in center field. This is what, one of those games where you really miss George Springer, number one, because if Springer's in the lineup, one of those other guys is not. I think that they went for offense against Bieber, right? They could have put Jackie Bradley Jr. back in center field. They could have had Tapia playing right field. Number one, I think they don't like, I rightly think they don't believe that Tapia has any place in right field. You know, maybe you put Merrifield in that keeps you from putting Merrifield in center, Tapia in right, and then Biggio back at second base. They had a team that was built for offense, built around the fact that they were getting Teoscar Hernandez a day off his feet and giving Bo Bichette a day off. So a lot of, and with Springer being out. So a lot of things were kind of working against the team in terms of the way the lineup was built. If you want to put that at the feet of the manager, his name is Schneider, Brian, Brent, Bob,
John,
Bill, John, Schneider. You could lay it at his feet. Front office, whoever it is that's scripting these days off, if that was the situation. The fact of the matter is the defense completely betrayed Kevin Gausman.
And that's been a theme. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that over the course of almost, maybe not all his starts, but you can point to a few where it's like, why is this happening to him?
Sometimes that just is how it goes. I used to joke around that like Brandon Morrow was the same way. Brandon Morrow would have great years, but like shit just happened to him. And that seems like it's going on with Kevin Gausman. I think that Kevin Gausman with Alejandro Kirk against Cleveland is a particularly bad matchup because they do love to steal. And Alejandro Kirk is not good at lots of things. And Kevin Gausman on his own is very much not good at holding runners on. Runners run roughshod over Kevin Gausman. They don't have too difficult a time running on Alejandro Kirk. More Gausman than Kirk, though. And then when you've got Biggio like not having a great day in the outfield, you've got little things like Tapia letting the ball bounce up over his head, right? Which sends an extra, gives up an extra base. All the extra bases that happen on those steals, extra run, yeah, extra bases extra that turn base. Into extra runs. Yeah. The bloops that, you know, the Austin Hedges, somebody was saying that like there's a understanding that. That Austin Hedges is one of the worst hitters some people have ever seen. Like, he's not a big league hitter. Yeah, and he had two hits. He had a double and a single. Both were like bloops that just landed where they needed to land. Again, not a guy you expect to beat you, a guy you expect to go up there and probably strike out. They didn't. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, Check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So while that's going on, that's undermining all of Kevin Gausman's best efforts, and it's exposing the Blue Jays. But then the other thing is, you watch the way that when you, it's so easy to credit things that when they go well, like okay, Mitch White and the Blue Jays bullpen really did a great job against Cleveland on Saturday. But then suddenly this mighty, unbelievable balance, the word someone used against me was balance. This incredible balanced offense. This Cleveland coming up with different approaches, like. Like the Blue Jays handed them that win, right? The Cleveland's offense is not a great offense. Cleveland's offense is cheap, right? They have a lot of guys who hit singles, and they have Jose Ramirez, right? And Josh Naylor, right? Their offense is cheap because guys who are singles hitters are easier and more cost effective to acquire than guys who hit for power. It looks great when it's working, right? But what happened on Saturday when all they could muster was six singles or five singles and a double off of Mitch White and a host of Blue Jays relievers? Suddenly, the offense doesn't look so great, but that's, of course, credit to Mitch White and not criticism of the way that that Cleveland run their offense. Cleveland beats up on the Blue Jays by doing what? Did they string a bunch of singles together on Friday night? No, they hit the ball over the fence, right? And why did the Blue Jays win on Saturday? Because they hit the ball over the fence. That's how it works. That's how baseball works right now. Well, it's easy to understand the appeal for me of watching Cleveland hit singles and run the bases very well. The model is for the Blue Jays should not be Cleveland in terms of what's wrong with their offense. We don't look to Cleveland to say what's wrong with the Blue Jays offense. Look to the Dodgers. The Dodgers are the model. And I got thinking about it, and I was looking at it today. This is now we're kind of transitioning into what's going on with the Blue Jays offense. Number one, they're missing a really good player, and they've got a couple of players who aren't really slumping, right? Kirk has not done anything recently. Neither has Danny Jansen. They didn't score against Bieber. They had a couple chances. Never really happened. Vlad's hitting streak is over. He's a guy who's really had some struggles in clutch moments this year so far. Anyway, the Dodgers are the model, right? Whatever the Dodgers do, the Blue Jays should try to do. And I think that's where they are. If you look at the Dodgers offense, and the Blue Jays offense actually have a lot of things in common, right? Freddie Freeman and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are similar. Freeman's having a much better year, but they do a lot of things the same. They don't strike out a lot. They walk a fair amount. They hit for power. Freeman, of course, is left-handed. Mookie Betts, there's not really a good Blue Jays parallel for Mookie Betts, but like even Teoscar Hernandez comes kind of close in terms of production, right? You've got Will Smith and Alejandro Kirk, similar guys. Now, those top three Dodgers hitters are having a better year than those top three Blue Jays hitters, but it's when you start to get down a little bit. You know, Gavin, if you look at Gavin Lux and compare Gavin Lux to Bo Bichette, for example, there's similarities. I mean, people, they want to rail against the Blue Jays and, oh, they only swing for the fences. But it's like the Dodgers have Max Muncy and that's all he does. They have Cody Bellinger and that's all he does. They went out and got Joey Gallo, another guy to do that. And they still score runs in bunches, right? It's just what the Blue Jays lack, I think, in a way, is they don't walk. And this is something that I was talking about with some folks online. For an elite offense, they have one of the lowest walk rates compared to the other teams around them, which I think can make it challenging to paper over holes. Or that's when you can have these kind of like longer furrow periods, I think, where like you have these big error bars or these big gaps in where the offense and how it's able to produce between you know, when things are going well and everybody's hitting the ball well and they're hitting the ball over the fence and things are going great versus when things aren't going well, when they're not hitting the ball over the fence. And while they do have, we've seen them a few different times have good rallies that weren't based around home runs, right? Again, yeah. Teoscar Hernandez has really changed his approach. He's been great. Lourdes Gurriel, you can't say enough about Gurriel. Had great plate appearances against Shane Bieber. Hit the ball hard to right field at least twice. Was on with singles, extra base hits. Gurriel is, in my mind, is the model for how you can be a good Blue Jays hitter with the Blue Jays philosophy of swing decisions and aggression and looking to do damage without looking to walk. But Gurriel is a great example of what it can look like when it's working really well. And you just need to have more Gurriels or more guys having Gurriel style at bats than the rest. So this is a kind of a convoluted way of me describing, like, the Blue Jays offense is still really, really, really good. By weighted runs created plus, the Blue Jays offense in 2022 is better than the Blue Jays offense in 2021. And that's without having to beat up on the Orioles yet.
Yeah.
Right? The 2021 Blue Jays got fat off the Orioles in a lot of ways. 2022 offense is better by weighted runs created plus by one point.
By 1 point. And I don't want to interrupt your thoughts.
Please.
Here, but I just wanted to say, like, I saw this yesterday and then I just looked it up. Like, for everyone that's like crediting the Cleveland Guardians offense and say, like, they get on base and they just hit the ball, whatever. Like, the Blue Jays on the season have a better batting average than Cleveland. The Blue Jays have the second best batting average. And I know batting average is obviously not like the stat that we're going to use as like a wholesale, this is the offense, but like the Blue Jays batting average is 263. The Dodgers is 261, just below them. The Cleveland Guardians, the batting average is 252. So the Blue Jays, like, for everything that people say about the offense and they only swing for the fences and they strike out a ton, it's like, that's actually not true. Like, and I think your point is a good one, is that they don't walk enough. And so then it, because they just put the bat on the ball so often, they're hitting into a ton of double plays. They hit a lot of ground balls. And of course some sneak through, but when you're like Tapia is a good example. It's like, you can see his plate appearances and on the surface, they look like really good plate appearances. And they are if he's seen like 9 or 10 pitches and he's fouling off 5 pitches. But on the other hand, he could take 4 pitches and just get a walk. And so sometimes those plate appearances, he gets a hit at the end of it and you look at it and you're like, that's a good plate appearances. He fouled off 4 pitches and then he got his pitch and he sent it into right field and he got on base. Sure, but he could also have done that more efficiently by taking the 4 balls that were thrown to him and he would have the same result. And so I think that is your point is a good one, whereas like the Dodgers do walk a ton, right? I mean, I think the Dodgers, let's see, their walk rate is 9.7, which is above average. Jays are 7.7, which is below average.
Below average for the league, but also below average for the 5 or 6 teams that the Blue Jays are among of the best offenses in baseball, which is what the Blue Jays are. Did they show it this weekend against Cleveland? No. Cleveland was able to game plan and pitch very effectively against this Blue Jays offense, which I think is maybe the question. And again, you can start to slice things real thin. And well, how do the Blue, you know, I did that today. Like, how do the Blue Jays fare against relievers? Maybe it's relief pitching that get the Blue Jays, which we've talked about. No, they're still right up there. What about late and close stuff? No, you know, high leverage, they've medium leverage, Blue Jays.
That was a big thing last year. And I remember looking at it this year, and it's not been the same story. They have been outscored in the 9th inning, but I think only slightly. But yeah, the late and close stuff was a huge thing last year. It's really not been an issue for them this year. They've sort of been fine in that department where you expect them to be. This offense, I mean, I'm going to let you finish your thought, but my big takeaway is they just go through these weird stretches where they kind of all slump at the same time to some extent, or they just have these games where I think, in the game that they lost, I think on Friday night, they actually had more hits than Cleveland. And they might have even, I'm not sure if they had more hits in Cleveland by the end of it, but certainly they were getting a lot of hits. It's just they're not getting those big hits when guys are on base. They keep, on Saturday, they did win that game, but both of their home runs were solo home runs.
I'll come back to the Dodgers again. Like, the Dodgers are the model. The Dodgers in June were significantly below their own standard in terms of offense. They managed just a 736 OPS there in the month of June. Mookie Betts had a terrible month. A couple of the guys had terrible months. Gavin Lux, sort of carried them. A couple of things I think that the Dodgers' best hitters don't strike out as much as the Blue Jays' best hitters, although they both are pretty similar in terms of strikeout rate. The other thing about the Dodgers is they are a very, very good base running team, while the Blue Jays are average. We've talked about this a lot. I love the way that Vlad runs the bases. I think he's become much improved. He doesn't make as many outs in the bases, and look, we can talk about Kirk another time. Alejandro Kirk is one of the two or three worst base runners in baseball. He doesn't make mistakes because he doesn't try, to his credit, but like those missed extra bases add up, right? Alejandro Kirk is going to have, like, he's at the point where he has to hit the ball over the fence to hit a double, unfortunately. So things like that, and Gurriel making outs on the bases like it's his job, those things add up. And credit to Cleveland for being a really good base running team, a team that steals a lot of bases. We've talked to you and I about Whit Merrifield adding that dimension as a member of the Blue Jays. Whit can't steal first. So
yeah, he's got to get on base to start doing that.
That is a little bit in neutral right now, but I don't know what if there's a good fix. There's no satisfying answer to the fact that, like, you when you zoom out, you realize it's easy to see the Blue Jays are a really good elite offense, one of the best offenses in baseball, better than they were last year when they scored tons of runs against like truly pitiful Baltimore Orioles team. But that doesn't matter when the Blue Jays lose, right? No. Because when they lose, you look at it and be like, what are they doing? Yeah. And what they're doing yesterday was they got destroyed by Shane Bieber, who pitched really, really well. And then they bring in they had their chances kind of come down the game, a couple add-on runs, and the tying run was at the plate or in the on-deck circle, Vlad. Nothing else.
No, Vlad was the tying run twice, I think. Mm-hmm. And the first time he managed to hit a ground ball that was kind of a fielder's choice, so they scored a run on it. Mm-hmm. So I guess that wasn't the tie. Yeah. And he didn't get it. And then, so mm-hmm. that made it 5-2. So I guess they had their chance in that scenario. And then, yeah, I guess it was the seventh, I believe, when Vlad was up with two on and he rolled over a slider. Sorry, I was just trying to remember mm-hmm. what happened to it and grounded out again. Yeah. And that's frustrating for him because he obviously has been their best hitter for a month now, if not more than that. Mm-hmm. Well, he's the best hitter permanently, but I mean the way that he was hitting the last mm-hmm. month, he looked like their best hitter. So totally frustrating for him. And I think what you're getting at is something that has been so difficult to contextualize as a writer this year, because I totally hear the fans' frustration when it comes to this offense. And I think when it's going good, nobody sort of realizes how good it's going. And then when it's going bad, it's all this team can't hit, this team can't adjust. But then a person like me who has to sort of say, well, why is that happening? And then you do look at the numbers and you're just left confused because you're like, any way you slice it, most of the time you're coming out with the Blue Jays in the top five offense. You know, if you look at hitting with runners in scoring position, hitting this way against, like you said, against relievers, against starters, again, and you, every time you come away with it, it's like, no, they're actually still pretty good. So then you sort of scratch your head or like pull your hair out and go, but why mm-hmm. is this then happening? And is it just an experience thing? Is it just like a growing pains thing? Is it just that sometimes those, for whatever reason, this team, when they get into these funks, they are a little bit more prolonged. So then it feels like it's worse. And then they come out of it and they do go and they win seven of their next nine or whatever it is. They've been doing that all year. And maybe that stuff gets overshadowed, or because they just start playing the way you imagine that they should be playing, it doesn't sort of get noticed that, oh, they're actually a really good team. And then when they don't look good, they just really don't look good. I think to a certain extent that is every team. Like, every team doesn't look good when they're not playing good, and every team looks really good when they're playing good. Like, when a player is good, they're good. When a player is playing bad, they look bad.
There's a part of me that thinks that the shortcoming of the team, and I have this, I don't know that there's any real good way to look into this other than they're all still very similar, right? Like, they're not, but they are. You know, Matt Chapman has like that three true outcomes approach that is unique among his teammates in a lot of ways. The Blue Jays don't strike out an abnormal amount of time, but that very specific sort of Blue Jays centric swing decision, do damage, aggression early in the count, but not only early in the count, as we talked about that Ben Clemens story or piece on Fangraphs about how Teoscar had really like changed gears. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., again, a guy who's like, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is like, has only had 5 home runs all year, and he hit at least 2 or 3 in April. Like, he's not hit, but he's become incredible. He has made an adjustment that makes him different. But on top of that, Sunday's game in particular, again, Sunday's game stands out. You're missing George Springer. You're missing Bo Bichette, who had the day off, which he's allowed to. He looked like he was losing his mind on the bench. All he wanted to do was get in and hit. There was a great shot of him like leg going, like he was, like it was in the wait, like it was an 80s movie, and he was in the waiting room while his partner was in giving birth or something like that. Like, but they, you know, the defense is the thing that, because the Blue Jays, because the Blue Jays calling card is offense, because they have so many talented offensive players, when they don't hit or when they don't win, the attention goes back. Or if they don't win and only score 2 runs, that's where the attention goes. Never mind the fact that they handed that game to Cleveland. They just gave it to them with their like repeated foibles in the outfield. Little things too, not just errors. Whit Merrifield makes a great effort. The ball bounces off his goddamn face and goes 30 feet into center field, run scores. Kevin Biggio makes a great play, you know, but misses one earlier. Again, the Austin Hedges thing, the stolen bases, and then Kirk throws the ball into center field because Gausman doesn't give him a good chance to throw anybody out. All those things add up. All those things are examples of ways that the Blue Jays allowed themselves to be beat on Sunday in particular. But we don't talk about those things on Sunday, or on the things that happened on Saturday. Saturday is the exact kind of game that the Blue Jays need to win. They had a really good pitcher who was pitching very well, and they did what they do, which is hit the ball over the fence in times where it's not easy to do, and they play good defense, and they got good pitching. All those things matter. If you play good defense against a team like Cleveland, guess what? They're not going to score. Why? Because very few of them can hit it over the fence. But then when they do, they win too. Just like everybody. You hit the ball over the fence, you fucking win.
The thing with the Sunday game too, which was, it, the whole game's complexion changes if the Blue Jays drive in a few more runs in the first inning, which they had the chance to do. They actually got a few hits. They were getting to Bieber early. Obviously, their approach to him earlier, whether it was they kind of anticipated what he was doing in the first, and then obviously he adjusted beyond that because then he really shut them down. But in that first inning, the Blue Jays had a chance to score 3 or 4 runs, and they had a couple on base. Teoscar drove in one with his double, I think, and then Matt Chapman struck out, and then Tapia hit a good ball, and Josh Naylor made a good play on the ball to stop that from extra bases. But had that ball gotten through, then they're scoring 3 runs, then it's suddenly 3-1 Blue Jays. Well, that changes the whole complexion of the game because Kevin Gausman can pitch a little more aggressively, a little differently, because it's not a 1-1 game, it's a 3-1 game. So you look at that too, and like that, the Blue Jays are quite good a front running team. I think when they score early and when they score first or they get a lead first, they're actually quite good at front running. Especially lately, like I know the bullpen is a popular topic to complain about, and I totally understand why there is some frustration with the bullpen. They don't strike enough guys out, all that kind of stuff. But they have been pretty effective lately. They've had a week here or there where it hasn't been good, but it's largely not been, it's been almost a non-issue, honestly, their bullpen performance. Yeah, when I look at that Sunday game, it's a little bit of like a missed opportunity story for them, because I think if they had put up somewhat of a crooked number in that first inning when they had the chance to do it, that changes. And then Bieber comes out pitching differently too. Like, he's not making the same adjustment as well. And the Blue Jays maybe have him on the ropes a little bit more. And it's just a completely different game. And so that, sometimes that's baseball. Like, again, Josh Naylor makes a good play. Blue Jays aren't getting those big defensive plays. And that was really the difference in that game. But totally a microcosm of the frustrations that happen with this team, and that like sometimes the balls don't go their way. Even on the Friday game, which they lost, they were actually hitting the ball very hard and it was going right at guys. That happens. And again, it's one of those things where it's, when it's happening to other teams against the Blue Jays, it's, oh, they're playing great defense, they're in the right spot all the time. And then when it happens to the Blue Jays, and again, you have to just tip your cap to another team that's playing good defense against them. But it totally can be frustrating because the process is there sometimes with the Blue Jays hitters. They are picking good spots to swing and they were hitting the ball hard. There was one that Bo hit really hard, but it went right at the third baseman, I think. if that ball had just been a little over, it gets through the hole and it's a completely different at bat. So those are the things too that's hard to contextualize and rectify with the Blue Jays, is that a lot of their process is quite good too, and that they do hit the ball really hard. Again,
maybe
it doesn't always
ground too much.
Yeah,
maybe that can still be the complaint.
Yeah.
Let Vlad be like on a flag bearer for that.
Yeah.
For too many ground balls. I think
Kirk does it a lot too.
Kirk does it a lot. You know, Kirk. Another day. I think that number one, again, you have to give credit to Shane Bieber because he's one of the best pitchers in the American League. Sure, he doesn't throw as hard as he used to, but he's still so good. There's no better compliment than or example of doing exactly what you described of changing his approach was when that big at bat against Vlad later in the game. And he threw first pitch, I think it was a cutter, and Vlad it was a strike. And then the next pitch was like 94 mile an hour fastball, a little bit of arm side run maybe, and Vlad took it right at the bottom of the zone. And then he did that thing where he like swung after, and he was so mad at himself because he, you know, knowing what he had known and watching Bieber work all day, he had an idea in his mind of what he was going to get in that count, and Bieber completely crossed him up and executed with a really good pitch that Vlad couldn't react to in time. And then now he's behind. Right now it's like whatever 1-2-0-2, and then the at bat is pretty much over. And as you said, you know, Vlad's been, his hitting streak is obviously over. He was obviously being super productive the whole time. But like, you hitting the ball hard. He had his double was 91 miles an hour on Friday night. And then he also lined out 115 miles an hour, 800 batting average, expected batting average. And there's an out. Like, that's just what happens sometimes. And
yeah.
I don't know. I guess the one thing, if I had to say, and I don't want to belabor this point too much longer, but I think the only thing I would have liked to see, and maybe that's why we have seen so much Kevin Biggio of late, is that they want to give a little bit of a different look, a little bit of a different type of hitter to what they have, which is these very aggressive right-handed batters who you know, maybe against in certain matchups that perhaps makes the group a bit more vulnerable, as opposed to if you had a little bit more left and right or a little bit more of a different type of approach. If you had like an Anthony Rizzo for example, maybe in this Blue Jays lineup, doesn't strike out, gets hit by the pitch all the time, you're just a different kind of hitter. Might that kind of accelerate their run scoring? I don't know, but it's not the concern. Obviously, the Blue Jays have a lot bigger fish to fry than just worrying about why they're only the third or fourth best offense in baseball. But it certainly gets the lion's share of the attention when they don't score.
Yeah. I think you also notice the absence of George Springer, because then it makes you're swapping, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in the middle of your lineup for him being the leadoff hitter. And while his new approach is a good profile for leadoff hitter, and he's performed pretty well in it, I think there was probably an adjustment period to it. But yesterday obviously was a good example of him doing what a good leadoff hitter should do, taking pitches, getting on base, all that kind of stuff. But George does that as well, and does it with more power and more, he can do more damage in that spot. And then you're putting a guy like Lourdes, who has proven to be really good hitting with guys on base and in those spots. And so that also changes how their lineup produces as well, because you're losing that productive bat in the middle with Lourdes because you're using him in the leadoff, and you're obviously just missing a guy who does a ton of damage for you in George Springer.
That's exactly it. That's it 100% is not, I just fully agree. Not only do you have a different look at the top, not only are you then missing that different look in the middle, you just have a worse hitter in the lineup, because there's nobody who's as good as Springer who's laying around waiting for playing time in the Blue Jays. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Given what we saw with the Blue Jays defense there on Sunday, do you think we might see more of one of Jackie Bradley Jr. or Bradley Zimmer in the lineup or just in general? Do we get a sense that maybe one guy is taking nose to head, taking the lead in the pursuit of that fifth outfielder's job?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, we might get an answer on that today on Monday when we're recording this, because there's some optimism that George Springer will be ready to go. They sort of vowed when he went on the IL that it could just be a 10-day thing, because ultimately whatever's happening with his elbow it's not as quick a fix as a 10-day thing, but the 10 days gave him enough time to get that injection, that anti-inflammatory shot, and then for it to calm down a little bit and do what it's supposed to do in there. And if it's ultimately not going to get better, it's not going to heal itself, then they can put him back in the lineup because he's not going to make it worse. And if this shot had helped calm down some of the inflammation in there, and they hope that at least to start off with, swinging the bat won't do anything worse, and then you give him maybe a few more days not playing in the field. So in terms of, I mean, the roster decision will come, and I wonder what it'll be, because I don't know that they're going to have that many outfielders on their bench. And so
when they have so many like quasi outfielders already on their bench.
Yeah. So did they see enough from Jackie Bradley Jr. to keep him? He probably doesn't have options, and neither does Zimmer. So it's one of those guys. Do you like what you get more from Zimmer in terms of speed? He is a little bit faster than Jackie Bradley Jr. I don't know what they're going to do with that. I haven't really thought about it deeply, and sometimes I think about these roster decisions and they're gonna go out in left field and make one that I'm not expecting. I also saw Taylor Cicedo in the Blue Jays clubhouse yesterday, so I wonder if he's back for the series against the Baltimore Orioles if they want another lefty, and he's been pitching really well. That'll require a 40-man move though, so that's where it kind of gets curious, because he'll need to get put back on the 40-man. So then you sort of do think there's going to be a lot of roster moves today to potentially get George back on and get Taylor Cicedo on, if he is indeed here to pitch. I don't know. He was here yesterday. He wasn't activated, but there could be a roster move with Trent going down because he pitched. So
sure did.
Yeah. In terms of that question, who's taking the lead in that, I don't know. These are the types of roster moves that I almost just fully admit that it's me just trying to make an educated guess and not being totally sure what they'll do, what they're thinking, and how do front offices think? Do they value a guy that's been on the team all year? And Zimmer, does he get sort of a leg up because he's been with them, and Jackie Bradley Jr. is like, you know, last one in, first one out type of thing? I don't know how they think about that or why they brought in Jackie Bradley Jr. Is it just because they wanted to give him a look? Is he going to show off enough in the handful of opportunities that he had with the Blue Jays to stick around? Is there another roster move that I'm not thinking of? Is there another guy that could potentially go on the IL? Like, is there other things that the Blue Jays could do to get George on and keep everyone around? Off the top of my head, I don't think so. But again, these are the types of roster moves that I just play a wait and see, because sometimes the front office always has like a trick up their sleeve with it, and it's maybe never as easy as you think it's going to be.
I can't imagine that that they would base any kind of roster decision on, like, well, Jackie Bradley Jr. had a hit the other day, so, you know.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
No, it's who is going to give you more in those big moments that you need it. And again, if Zimmer is a fraction faster on the bases and he's probably still better defensively than Jackie Bradley Jr., do you keep him around? Is he more useful? Like,
I think that the biggest thing that I would say is that the Blue Jays have given Jackie Bradley Jr. and the more plate appearances in the last 3 days than they have given Bradley Zimmer since the All-Star break. Which is to say they've given each of them three. So that is a rousing note of support for poor Bradley Zimmer. I know what I was going to ask. So if they do say they do go with Bradley Zimmer, might we see the Blue Jays continue to or make an effort? Maybe they don't are as concerned with it as I am, but more defensive first arrangements. Like, might we see more times with a Bradley Jr. starting in center field just to try to bolster the defense, particularly maybe when Kevin Gausman's on the mound. I'm thinking from now on, if when Kevin Gausman pitches, you do like the old football, like the hands lineup, like hands. Everybody who's playing today is going to be the best defender at their position that we got. And we're going to do everything we can to save poor Kevin Gausman's sanity by having like defense everywhere you look. We you know, they're gonna play, they'll play Tapia in left, they'll play Zimmer in center, and they'll play Jackie Bradley Jr. in right.
Lourdes has taken the lead in turn. I think he's actually been one of their better defensive outfielders. Do the numbers not grade out that way?
I'm going to look right now. Okay. I'm going to guess that you're right.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't seemed like quite the adventure that
they don't, and they also don't remove, does. They don't remove him. Like they do a situations often in the late innings when George was playing and they would put Zimmer in center. They'd move George to right and they'd keep Lourdes. It's not like they moved Teoscar over to left. They would keep Lourdes in left. I don't know
that changed even over the course of the season.
Yeah.
Where they started favoring keeping Gurriel back there.
Yeah.
This year, Gurriel by Baseball Savant, he is -2 outs above average in left, and then, you know, average at shortstop or at first base where he's played just a brief amount of time. It is important to note that, as I often do, that Baseball Savant's outs above average does not include throwing arm, yeah, which is, of course, Lourdes Gurriel is kind of stock and trade. He has a terrific arm that, even if he hasn't thrown as many people out this year, because words got out and people don't run on him, which has a ton of value its own.
That saves runs on its own, even though it doesn't 100%. Show up. It doesn't show up necessarily in the statistics. But you see people don't test his arm anymore because it's...
Mm-hmm. According to defensive run saved, he's +2. According to ultimate zone rating, he's way worse, -4. But I don't know if I buy that. They've docked him a lot for his arm, which doesn't. I mean, I'm sure there's reasons for it. Doesn't really track as well, you know, given what we know about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. So hard to argue that Gurriel maybe isn't the best option in left field. If you needed to go full hands, like you were trying to save, you know, game 7 of the World Series and you got a 2-run lead and, you know, maybe you go full on like Bradley Zimmer, Jackie Bradley. If it's game 7 of the World Series and both Bradley Zimmer and Jackie Bradley Jr. are on the postseason roster, something crazy has happened if the Blue Jays are in the World Series with the roster in that same sort of situation. Dare we look ahead, Caitlin, a little bit to the upcoming series
against the Orioles?
Baltimore Orioles, yeah.
The dreaded Baltimore Orioles.
I think I don't usually do this.
Okay.
I'm going to make sure that Ricky and I talk about Jose Berríos. This is my promise to myself and to everyone listening, because it's worth delving into. You and I went crazy on the offense. Ricky and I will talk about Jose Berríos later this week. What about the Orioles? They almost got perfect gamed yesterday, against Tampa Bay Rays. They are they're pesky. The Orioles aren't going anywhere. There seems to be a lot more belief among the in the front office, and the front office saying the right things. The clubhouse, they think they can make the playoffs. They're right there. Blue Jays just saw them. I wonder if there's anything that Blue Jays can have learned, will have learned from the series in Baltimore.
Well, there are going to see. Apply. I'm just looking at the pitching matchups this week, and both teams are going to have the same advantage against each other because they're seeing the same two guys that they saw last week. Kyle Bradish is going for the Blue Jays, or sorry, for the Orioles against them tonight, and Yusei Kikuchi is going for the Blue Jays. So the Orioles got to him last time out. The Blue Jays didn't quite get to Kyle Bradish. I feel like they were, again, doing that thing where they were maybe, yes. And I actually heard Dan Connolly, our Orioles reporter, talk about this, where Kyle Bradish has had a season in which you're kind of scratching your head as like how he's doing it, is that he allows a lot of hits, but he somehow turns it on a little bit when guys are on base and he gets out of it. And so you'll see these lines where it's like he allows 8 hits, but 2 runs or something like that. So he's had the season like that. I think it was him. Hopefully I'm not confusing another guy with that.
Jordan,
but anyway.
Lyles could be either of those.
Oh yeah, maybe it was both.
It could be both.
Now that I think about it, it might have been Jordan Lyles. But I think Kyle Bradish is kind of the same way. And I think he was against the Blue Jays where it was like they were putting good swings on it and they just weren't getting the results. And anyway,
that is my recollection as well. Yeah. Of course, Bradish was the guy that the Blue Jays had faced earlier in the season and really, you know, roughed up.
Is that the game where that was the game where Bo hit the 2 home runs, I think?
Yeah, let me double check. Okay. I think that definitely happened. Bo Bichette did hit 2 home runs.
I believe it was that game.
Bo Bichette hit 2 home runs in the game against Kyle Bradish.
There you go. Yeah, so Brian that was Baker the game
gave
where
up
they
a home run. Yeah.
Oh, Brian Baker gave up a home run and Bo got one against Kyle Bradish, right?
But I think, go ahead, please. I have an idea.
That was the game where they should have won, and then they had the rain delay. They kind of burned. They burned Zach Pop, and then they probably wouldn't have arranged there. And then Yimi Garcia gave the home run up to Odor on that kind of inexplicable change-up pitch, which probably should have been a fastball. And you kind of just have to, I don't know. That's just
flush
bad.
Flush it and move on.
Yeah.
I was thinking, so Kyle Bradish, and I mentioned this either with you or with Ricky, Kyle Bradish has a cutter, right? He throws a cutter like 94, 95. I can't speak to the effectiveness of the pitches, but I think I said before, but it looks really nice on TV, right? That little bit of like at the last second. Love a good cutter on the old behind center field camera. But Bo Bichette took him deep out to right field, which is something that I would look for from the Blue Jays, Lourdes Gurriel in particular. I'd like to see maybe the same sort of thing from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., where that cutter, I think I feel like if you try to pull that cutter, it's going to break your bat. So if the Blue Jays maybe come in with a mindset of like, if he throws that cutter, we're going to either, you know, spit on it if it's outside, or if it starts over the middle of the plate, we can go the other way and be that kind of adaptable, pesky, quote unquote, balanced offense. I think this is a good opportunity to do that, to demonstrate that you can make good swing decisions. You can have a plan. You can do damage, but also you don't have to play into the pitcher's hand. I think that would go a long way to assuaging. Well, number one, it would go a long way to winning the game, which is number one. That's all you need. Number two, it would go a long way to like making some of us who are watching more closely than others make us feel better, because I think that might be a good way to approach Bradish, a guy they have touched up a lot before. So there's the opportunity to go and get him again if they come in with a good approach and are able to play to their own strengths and with an understanding of what he's going to try to do to them. So that's something that I'm going to look for. And as I've said ad nauseum, Bo Bichette is so good going to right field. Man, if I was the Orioles, I would be looking to, when Bo Bichette becomes a free agent, I'm like, Bo, come, please take advantage of our pesky little right field wall that's very, very close and very high, because he would look great banging doubles and hitting home runs off of that, over and into that thing. For years, not that he wouldn't look good in a Blue Jays uniform, but it's always nice when the ballpark can line up with the personnel that you've got, like Rugi Odor. I saw Orioles bloggers being like, we can credit the turnaround to Rugi Odor. And I thought to myself, what the fuck? But I think it's probably true. But they also are like, we need to find a better role for him, because let's be real, he's still Rugi Odor.
And on the flip side, you need Yusei Kikuchi to not be handing the Orioles free bases and fastballs down the middle to hit out of the ballpark. You need a good performance from him, I think. Not just because you need to get yourself out of the slump, but I think that he needs it for himself. I think that he came off the IL a couple of weeks ago, looked okay, or looked good, I guess, against the Tigers. Looked, so-so. His next start wasn't great against the Orioles. Although, give him credit for going. I think he finished with six innings. He gave the Blue Jays more length than maybe you thought he was going to in those initial innings. But the thing Definitely. With him is that he's got to just not let those bad innings snowball or have an inning get out of hand the way that he's been prone to do lately. So if it's just
he did battle that one
he did. He looked better by the end of it. So that's how you know it's in there. You know, he stuck in there. He was finally landing some of his pitches. It was just those few opportunities where it's like he walks somebody and then it's giving up a home run.
It was the worst case scenario for Yusei Kikuchi, which is walks and then home runs.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen him a couple times out. You know, give up a couple solo home runs. I can live with that. If I'm the Blue Jays, if I'm Yusei Kikuchi, I mean, if I'm his agent, I already did my job. But everybody else can like get by with that. But it's when you couple those walks with the home runs, suddenly you put your team down into a pretty deep hole. And it's a lot of work to try to dig out from underneath that. As the Blue Jays look to get back, you know, he gave up five runs. And that was a game where there was some frustration around. But then they went to Richards, then they went to Trent Thornton when the game was close. But then it sort of slipped a little bit more out of reach as Thornton and Richards in particular were unable to hold the Orioles at bay, giving up a run each. So lots to watch with Kikuchi. Interesting thing, if George Springer does come back and is kind of installed in that DH role, maybe not the worst idea to get a little bit of extra rest for Alejandro Kirk. I think we'll probably, you know, all these things that factor in together. Okay, so why Kirk caught two out of three against Cleveland, or played two out of three. You know, he catches Sunday, so then maybe the plan is then Danny Jansen will be back there with Kikuchi again. Danny Jansen, a bit more veteran, a little bit more guy who's going to take charge and kind of grab Kikuchi by their shoulder.
They have been pairing Danny, I think, with Kikuchi ever since he's come back from the IL. I think that that is the pairing they like for that sort of veteran, at least a stronger hand in saying, throw this pitch. I think I just want to mention one thing with Danny Jansen that has sort of occurred to me. And I think that it maybe contextualizes maybe the struggles that he's had is that sometimes when you have those freak hand injuries, I think they take a while to come back. And I sort of wonder, I wonder if he's still feeling a little bit. There's one thing where I think the earlier injury like oblique or something. Sometimes those can linger, but considering like a hand and how much a catcher is using the hands and then you've got a swing and then there's just, I sort of wonder if that is playing a role in maybe him not coming back the same way that he was hitting before the IL. Like just think about how much he's using that hand, those hands obviously, and how he has to stay on top of it in the catching role. And then, like you're also swinging a bat. And if your hand is still sore a little bit, like, I'm sort of wondering if that's an explanation to maybe him not having quite the power that he was showing early on. Is like, is there some lingering pain or discomfort or whatever it may be, that I sort of wonder about that.
And that I think in number one, yes, that's an ignorant job. That's why they call them the tools of ignorance. That is a very physically demanding job, only made more so by the A, number of pitches in the game, and B, the amount of velocity in the game. When you add in nagging, kind of dull, aching injuries like a hand break or contusion or whatever it was that had him down, it's only going to get worse. That said, maybe Danny Jansen is a bit of a candidate for an adjustment to his approach when he's not able to generate as much bat speed and as much power as he does typically. And we saw Danny Jansen earlier in the year when it was just, we were joking about Danny Bautista and just like selling out for power and like just trying to hook everything down the line. If your bat's a little slow and your hand's a little, you know, a little beat up, maybe that isn't going to work. And so what we've seen is Danny Jansen really scuffling ever since. So maybe he's a guy we can count on or look for or hope for to make a little bit of an adjustment in his approach and try to be the Danny Jansen, like, all fields hitter that he was when he was a little bit younger. That said, whatever. Swing for the fences. Who cares? You know, you're the hitter. Yeah. You're the catcher. It's a hard job. No one expects anything from you anyway.
It's interesting, though, because when he came out of the All-Star break, where he presumably would have gotten some good rest in there, he looked amazing in that Red Sox series, right? He was what did he have, 6 RBI in that game? He had 2 home runs in that 28-run scoring game, and he had a really good series against. But as the workload builds up and he's behind the plate and he's not getting as much rest, you sort of wonder, is that hand bothering him a little bit? But that's baseball.
That's baseball. It's a long season. And one thing, number one, that I think about is, when it comes to the roster machinations, is there maybe an opportunity to get another catcher up here? Maybe not. The roster's only expanded to 28 in September. Also, not 1,000 like it used to be. So it's not going to be open season, and there'll probably be a few different folks who are missing out. And the Blue Jays are facing a lot of 40-man roster questions. So lots to look forward to. Lots to look forward to coming up this week as the Blue Jays face first Baltimore and then the New York Yankees. The ever scuffling but ever dangerous New York Yankees. Shout out to Lindsay Adler, who got to meet Spike Lee this week. Big news on Lindsay's Twitter feed. We love Lindsay. Covers the Yankees for The Athletic. So if you subscribe, you can read everything that she writes. You can read everything that Caitlin writes. You can read everything that Dan Connolly writes about the Orioles. And you can read everything you want to read about what's going on with Manchester United, West Ham United, which is where I spend the lion's share of my time on The Athletic, is reading about soccer. So much to my own agony, given the way that West Ham has started the season. But look forward to everything Caitlin's going to report live and in person and in color from the Rogers Center this week. Ricky Romero and I will be back. As I said, we're going to talk about Jose Ramiro. His name is Ricky Romero. He and I will talk about Jose Barrios. It's hard to do from home, but there's a growing suspicion that Jose Barrios is tipping his pitches. So when Ricky and I put our heads together, we'll see if we can figure out an answer to that one. Her name is Caitlin. My name is Drew. We will talk to you on the next edition of Spin Rate.